Loi Rachikulis Akeis. Rashi explains, we saw the Rashi sheet the last time, Shli Rachikulis Akeis Da'avona. They shouldn't distance the case by doing Averas. One could understand the notion of Shli Rachikulis Akeis differently. You can call this an avon also, but it's a different kind of a notion. There is a frame of mind in which, if I explained all this already, just remind me, I'm repeating myself. There's a frame of mind in which the Jewish people are not interested in the case. And that itself is merachik in case. Sometimes the case is banging on your door, and you're not so interested in letting it in. The Rav in Kol Dido Fake. In the section on the Shesh Tzvikot, he doesn't refer to B'yes HaMashiach. He doesn't talk about chaos. But he does talk about lost opportunities. I don't need to say that he was referring to the chaos specifically, not even generally perhaps. But there is a notion of where the case is here, or if not here, it's apparent, it's in view. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe even you can see the end of the tunnel itself. Maybe you're exiting the tunnel. But there's no openness to its arrival. The classic example of this is the psukim at the beginning of Sefer Ezra, where Koresh sends a letter to the Jewish community saying that he's very interested in having the Jewish people move back to Eretz Israel and rebuild their Beis HaMikdash. Whoever wants to go will receive financial support. The Yah. In fact, this is how Sefer Divrei HaYamim ends, with the same three psukim that appear at the beginning of Sefer Ezra. In certain sense, one can look at the Sefer Divrei HaYamim as saying, by ending that way, is that this is the end of this point of Jewish history up to here. From here on in, there's something new, something different. We're working into. It would appear that the great majority of Jews in Babel and throughout the Persian Empire remained in Babel, to the point that it's apparent that Megillas Esther takes place after Koresh has sent out his declaration. And Ahasuerus is a king, several kings after Koresh. And yet there are Jews who are still scattered, and many apparently, many in Shushan, and many in the 127 provinces. It sounds like there are Jews everywhere throughout the whole Persian Empire. And on the one hand, one can and should appreciate that 42,000 Jews actually came, picked themselves up and went to Eretz Israel at that time, the number mentioned at the beginning of Sefer Ezra. But who knows how many didn't? I mean, we can only measure such things by the Jews killed 50,000, 57,000, I think, enemies on Purim Day, the day before Purim, I guess, in the Megillas Esther. That's what it says. I think I'm getting the number right, more or less right. How many enemies did the Jews? How many Jews were there? That they had 57,000 enemies. I guess one person can also have 57,000 enemies. But the battles were in terms of the thousands, and it's by and large the Jews stayed in the Gaulis. And I think it's a Medrash. It says that if it's not in Medrash, Shir Shirim, right on that pasuk, it's called the Deed of Fake, then it's in the somewhere else. But the Medrash itself, the Kol Deed of Fake, with the opportunity of going back there to Israel, and that the Jewish people did not take up the opportunity. Furthermore, who did take it up? It's very clear that those who took it up, those who didn't fit into the, not everybody, but many of them didn't fit into the community very well. Many of them had psula yichus, nesinim, who knows what else. To the point that the Gemara in Kiddushin says that the yichus of the whole world is not good as compared to the yichus of Eretz Yisrael. The yichus in Eretz Yisrael is not good as compared with the yichus in Babel. In Babel, they knew where things were in Eretz Yisrael. You can tell from the beginning of Sefer Ezra that there, who was accepted, who wasn't accepted, and it was like it was a big mishmash at the time. And the are those, you know, there are two approaches amongst the Mepharshim in explaining what took place. One approach, the approach of the Rabbanel, I imagine others, but I don't really know who. Rabbanel certainly feels that the second base of Mikdash, given that it was done the behester panim, that there was no Aron HaKodesh, that there were no Nisim, that everything was it was under the rule of the Persian government right from the beginning, and of course it maintained its independence only under the Chashmonaim. The Chashmonaim was not always such a wonderful time for the Jewish people either. The Lusach HaKol wasn't a good enough reason to go and live in Eretz Israel. And that's how the Arba Rabbanel explains why Daniel didn't come to live in Eretz Yisrael. But that's also apparent that Daniel didn't come with the cruise of Koresh, because he's still sitting there in the third year of Koresh, when in the Koresh, I think in his first year already, he made his cruises. Yeah. But there are other opinions that, on the contrary, say that this was the opportunity lost. This was the Richluk HaKeretz. This is with the Gehula, you know, that, just as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make Chizkiyahu HaMelech Mashiach and some Cheir Gog U'Magog. That Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, the Nevuos in Yeshayahu, in Zechariah, towards making Zerubbabel Mashiach, so to speak, the mitzvah Tzayi David HaMelech, that somehow it just didn't develop. We don't really know what even happened to Zerubbabel in the end. The maintenance of the dynasty of David HaMelech was maintained in the reign of Usa in Babel, and the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael did not maintain any sort of dynasty of David HaMelech. But many years later, Hillel was considered to be a descendant of David HaMelech, but the it certainly didn't come from the beginning of the time of the Bayis Sheni. It was an opportunity lost. It was an opportunity. Let me just look. In Rashi on the side. That refers specifically to the beginning of Hashem, or even the Sitkos. In any case, this is the problem of Richluk HaKeretz. That we're not interested in the change, we're not interested in the Gula. We we settled in too well. Look at us. How is it that 3-4 generations ago, so many of our ancestors were sitting in Eastern Europe somewhere, Central Europe perhaps, and we are so noticeably of the country of our origin in no time at all. With habits and language and fit right in. And same with the Jews of North Africa. There were paradoxes because the historians claim that in the time of Shabtai Tzvi, there was a tremendous amount of people who picked up to go. They were quite ready to leave where they were and for the coming of the Mashiach that they thought he was. What interest is there in Mashiach today? Except for the garbage. Of course, a tragic situation there. The notion of not being merachik v'keitz, not just ba'avonim, but in general, is expressed in the Gemara on Shabbos and in the Talmud Ligin, that one of the questions that the person will be asked about love is tzipis of Yeshua. Were you looking for redemption? One fellow whose grandfather was a Belzer Chassid, said that when they were in Belz, every step they took was Eretz Yisrael. The realization of so many opportunities here is, of course, it's convoluted and made very difficult in light of the secular rise of Zionism, but the richuk hakeitz, the putting it off, the distancing it, they're not looking for it. In the lashon of the Rambam, ani v'amei v'mur Hashem v'vias haMashiach. The Alpha Pishi is Mameha, Inkoze Achakano v'chol yom shiyavo. That's how the Rambam brings in the notion of Tzipis of Yeshua into the. It's not the lashon of the Rambam, it's the lashon of the Paitan. But the Paitan is expressing a crucial notion in the din of Emunah v'vias haMashiach. That it's not just that you believe he'll come, but you're anxious to see him come. And when he comes, there's no notion of who has to come. This is the notion for the Rachlus Akeitz, or an alternate notion to Rashi. So the Rachlus Akeitz by Avonah, even without Avonah, that to distance the Akeitz in one's mind to be something which not only can't happen now, not only may not happen now, but something we're not really interested in happening right now. It doesn't matter whether it happens now. It's we're basically fine. We don't need anyone interfering with our lifestyle, with the way we're doing things, and with our comforts. And that's what's Richuk HaKeitz. A kind of Richuk HaKeitz. We met tomorrow, we'll talk about Rashi's other gifts. Yes?
Is what you're saying, that basically the kids is not, the idea of the kids is not necessarily defined per se? Time? Not necessarily? said that we don't necessarily know when the kids is, but the way you kind of seem to blow over today, the impression is not going to be established. It's just a constant of when it happens, and when it happens, it will change.
I guess this is something that we don't have from a surgery theory, partially because of Shloi Galus Akeh. The Shloi Galus Akeh makes clear that there is something called the Akeh, there's a moment called the Akeh. It's just that we're not informed when it is. But that lack of being informed implies, first of all, that there is such a time. Yeah. Contrary to the way you felt, I express things. And at the same time, as things work, when things are nistar, there might be flexibility because we're not given a name. The Gemara Darshan's on the pasuk, Ani Hashem Vita Achishena. Vita is in Lo Yasin Shuvah, I think they say. Achishena is in Yasin Shuvah. If we're not Zoche, then the case will come when it's supposed to come. And if we will be Zoche, then it will come before. So there is a point at which the case should arrive. But we don't know when that is, and we don't know how far, you know, even approximately it might be. There are suggestions in the Gemara that the world can go on for 6,000 years and then Mashiach comes. And there are all sorts of computations on that basis. But we know that the Rishonim were all looking for an earlier time, when they also did predict a particular day. And there's a difficult point, but you know, that's the problem. It must have been about 15, maybe more years ago, that Rav Shach, Yichya Liyam, Tovim V'Aruchim, came out with a comment apparently that we managed without the Golan for the past 3,000 years, or 2,000 years, we could manage without the Golan for another 2,000 years. It was at the time when Begin annexed the Golan. Golan is, by law, part of Israeli territory, by Israeli law. It's not not considered to be fine. He was ready to negotiate away. It's a minor difficulty in the mosaic of Israeli politics and diplomacy. But Begin annexed the Golan. And it passed for the his votes, if you vote for Labor, also voted for it. So Rav Shach was against it. He felt that he was just being Megareh the Umot, and as we said, we managed without the Golan for 2,000 years, we managed without the Golan for another 2,000 years. So the Valash Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha got very upset that he said that. How could he say such a thing? It's against Mamre Chazal, it's going to be as a Mashiach will be, and that kind of concern. If I'm not mistaken, in the parish of the Aruch HaChaim HaKadosh, some of the Mikras Gedolos, you know, the old edition of the Mikras Gedolos, which Aruch HaChaim is the Aruch HaChaim was a Sephardi Rav, the outstanding Sephardi Rabbanim of his time. He lived at the same time as the Baal Shem Tov. Hasidic stories about the two of them, though they apparently never met in our world, so to speak. The Rav Shabbat. It's very long parish on Chodesh. So I think either in his in the beginning of Parashas Achrimos or in the beginning of Parashas Bahar, I can't forget which, he or Chukosai, he talks about Bias HaMashiach, points out that the Rishonim who gave times already, and they passed. And he said, you see from here that the Abban Hussein Harab and the Mashiach is coming with delay. So whether it was just his intense kavod for these Rishonim who gave these dates and that it didn't arrive, that he saw no reason to doubt. I brought him to this conclusion. Whatever it is, he seems to be open to such a possibility that it could be such a thing. Just because it says somewhere that Mashiach has to come by this time, if he doesn't come by this time, it doesn't mean that's the end of the story. It's delay. And the delay could be based on our actions. And this is a kind of a conclusion that one has to reach from the Gemara in Sanhedrin Sadi Zayin. In the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua and Rabbi Shmuel as to whether any saw in the Gaon Ela B'Tshuva, or whether he saw in the Gaon even without Tshuva. As if any saw in the Gaon Ela B'Tshuva, then, and if we do have the Chir Chafis, then we'll have to wait for ourselves. We're waiting for ourselves perhaps more than for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send the Mashiach. While if he saw in the Gaon even without Tshuva, against the psak of the Rambam, then the Ita is a very clear-cut definer. It means that we will vada do tshuva by then, or what? We don't understand these things well enough. But the notion those of you who are not intensely familiar with the psukim at the towards the beginning of Parakei and Shir Shir from Pasuk Gadama, read about the woman lying there in bed, and suddenly her dog comes and knocks on the door and says he's here, and her slowness and decision basically not to come and until she hears him release the doorknob and leave. Suddenly she realizes he really left and jumps out of bed and opens the door to find him and not there anymore. Abba Eden said about the Arabs, the Arabs never lose an opportunity to lose an opportunity. One has to be careful that supposedly Arab trait isn't reflected within us on the spiritual level. Because the relationship between Ba'avonam and the lack of interest, how much of it is Avon, how much of it is just, all our golden ages. Most famously of Spain, Berlin is Jerusalem, and Vilna is Jerusalem, and Jeddah is Jerusalem, and everything is Jerusalem. Everything is becomes just fine. And we're not expected to act upon it in a super active way. I don't think so. But we are expected to be receptive. there seems to be a resistance to being receptive also, in all sorts of ways, not being, no longer able to handle opportunities of the Buddha when they want.
I think, I mean, as you indicated, that it is because of the tradition that the coming of the Mashiach is associated with that all the Jews come to that Israel. And this also, for example, that is the picture, I mean, the picture of Adonis Chassidishiraga, who in the whole time that he was waiting, he had a suitcase. Because he was prepared to come to that Israel. And you, I mean, but you say that nowadays this notion is almost completely lost, even among the religious Jews. I think it is really one could blame the realization of our Jewish state, because I mean I know about it, as far as I know, the end of the 19th century. When people were waiting for the emancipation of the Jews, the feeling they expected the emancipation of the Jews was like a kind of the coming of the Mashiach. And from the Zionists, for the Jews who were Zionists, for them, their type of messianism was to go to Eretz Israel. And because of this, that this was realized, it sounded like incredible what happened. Because of this, that we started with a huge messianic feeling at the end of the 19th century in Europe. And that people came to Eretz Israel, it was like something, even the non-religious, they felt kind of spiritually elevated, and in their terms, it was the Satan of the Messiah. And because of this, I think the religious Jews are affected by it. And even though that on Shabbos we say that the Medina of Israel is the yes. That I don't think so. We believe, and the reason is exactly because it's impossible to live in Eretz Israel. Do you understand? But you say it's like a kind of where the other way around.
Yeah, let me say what you said in different words so you can explain to me what you didn't say this perhaps. A beginning realization of this actually taking effect somehow satisfied the people's interest to the point that it was deadened. Well, unless everything's going to happen in one big swoop, then it's bound to be the case. There'll be a beginning. And the lack of interest is on many different levels. It's to the point of outright and absolute assimilation, both in Western and Eastern countries. It comes to a complete shedding of religious practice that was except for a few, and still hope for the cheering Israel on, as many Jews do. It comes to efforts to help, but from a great distance, with a significant contribution. It comes to the rejection of the state, not seeing that it's been a reshit mechaikul opinion, in light of its utter lack of religious coercion, and sometimes pitfalls or perceived pitfalls we might put in the way of religious truth. It also comes with absolute and complete identification of the state of Israel with a refusal to actually take the step of coming to the Mashiach. It could take involve also coming to the Eretz Israel, but to not perceive it as part of this continuing process, and to miss opportunities of this sort as well, that seems to be going on quite a bit. The But you know, that's where everything is. It, you know, you're very hungry. You sit down to the meal. They give you a fruit cup. I said, would you like more? Of course, you're still hungry. You only had a fruit cup. Yeah. The fact that there's the filter fish and soup and the salad and the main dish with all sorts of fillings and then a dessert is, may not be on your mind when you just want to fill up on the fruit cup. At this moment in time, we're so hardly aware of how far we are, and in so many different ways. And Baruch Hashem, we're not giving speeches now. That this is now. This is the literal preamble to everything getting better. Like the speeches we read 10 years ago in the Persian Gulf. You know, we go all sorts of signs, Kaaba, Faras, Sukkim and Daniel, and all sorts of tumult. We're having a hard time now. Having a hard time. Obviously, I'm sort of having a hard time now. I don't know, I'm here in the Jewish, in the fact that experience is very heavily. Experiencing very heavily everywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but there's not sometimes an acute awareness of it. In the Gola, I don't know, you should know if you're counting balance, maybe, I'm not sure. But realization of the our experience here right now is fully appreciated. And I just don't know. I mean, yeah, there are people who are very sensitive, but yeah, I was at Yale for Shabbos Rishis. So one of our former students, Zach of Moshe, Jonathan Bernstein, and some of you may know him, remember? He asked Rabbi Ilan Heber, who's so to speak, now the head of the Torah community in Sayyid Yah, together with his wife. He asked if maybe Shal should, so I can speak about what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. It was a rather pointed thing because more or less 36 hours before that, the Meshul had been vandalized. And of course, plenty had happened during Chodesh Tishrei, which is in the process of ending. It's been another month since then now. I was going to do it. And then, Rav Ivan told me that should know that as far as places are left wing in their perspective, he's never seen any place quite as left wing as Yale. Is that clear? As Yale University. That what generally happens is someone comes and talks with what is perceived as a right-wing presentation. They just tune out. And it's over, so if I'm going to do it, which for a moment he suggested I should, before you, I should think if I could present it in such a way so it would not appear as just a harangue. Against the Arabs. Well, yeah, I felt that the bird was not in my hand to let go of was a crush. It was completely in the hands of those who were listening to me, how they would experience what I'm saying. I didn't talk about it. And I didn't experience any personal difficulty not talking about it. That wasn't what I went there for. I had other purposes in going there. And certainly there's no direct connection between my shul and the Yale University community. And I would have to deal with my shul enough when I got back. I did. But when your ears are closed, then they're closed. Then you can't hear what's happening. Then someone who, I mean, Sahako had been out of Eretz Yisrael at that time. It was Shabbos. I left Sunday night. 5 days? 6 days? 6 days. I had been around already, but I was still rather fresh from the experiences of since Erev Rosh Hashanah until then. And it was very normal and natural of Yaakov Moshe Bernstein to ask for what was going on, and I should speak about it. Sat next to an older, not a student, obviously. He's an older member of the community, very influential and popular. Not Orthodox, it so happens, but it doesn't matter for the purpose of this conversation. And they were very interested in what was going on. She was very interested, and she asked me questions. She asked for my perspective. I tried to put it across. And at some point, she explained to me, she told me, but you know, the Palestinian is really suffering. And I responded that maybe they are, but it doesn't give them the right to try to kill me. And she said, you're right. But there's apparently deep commitment towards being objective or even-handed or supporting the underdog, even if the underdog is a murderer in this particular case, was not let go of. It's possible some of you are sitting here and thinking, how could Rabbi Shrader not have spoken about it? Perhaps it was a mistake, but I didn't feel it was, I could be wrong, I could have been wrong. I didn't feel it was my mistake. I felt it was the community's mistake. I felt that, there's a joke. I once heard from Rabbi Rav, Zichron Levracha. He said, what's Olam Haba? He said, Olam Haba is all tzaddikim and Rishon, they're all together. There are a lot of stories like this, but I'm just telling this one. They're all together. And there, Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and gives the shiur in the sugya of Reb Chanina Sgan HaKohen, in Daf Yudimah in Pesachim. Very difficult subject. And for the tzaddikim, it's Canada. And for the Rishonim, it's Gehenna. I was a unique person at that moment who had a message. Not the message I came with, but it was in my pocket, that message, to put across. And I was basically being informed that there aren't really ears to hear it. So come with your prepared speech and don't ad-lib. And this is Ani Yishena V'Libi Er. Until Kamti Ani Nistach V'Libi V'Libi Chamak Avar. You know, after speaking to that woman, later, a few minutes later, seeing next to her husband, he also was talking to me. You know. And as I was getting up to leave, he said, I heard there was a shul in the front. There was the endless. That was my shul. I went. When I spoke, not the speech that might have been the one about Eretz Yisrael, I spoke to a small group. I dedicated my the Dvar Torah to Moshe Eisenfeld, who was a graduate of Yale, who no one there knew him, and I suppose they heard his name. But mentioned that he'd been killed in something called the Bus 18 bombing. Also, it goes back almost 5 years. I don't know how well people remember these things if they live in Chutzlai, if they didn't know anybody involved. And the connections between what was happening then and what's happening today are clear enough, certainly in light of the Chadera blindness. But you hear what you can hear, you hear what you're able to hear. You have to you weren't said Hedgen says that that Hillel said both about Hillel and about Shmuel, I think. Shmuel HaKotan, his Talmud. That they were roi for a nevuah, but that the door wasn't drawing, so they didn't receive it. You can only give, you can only express, you can only do. Where there's reception. Yeah, it's the Rav who points it out, but it's, you know, it's, one of the uniquenesses of in terms of there are people running around today trying to synthesize Torah with the Eastern religions. The reason that they succeed in creating a Havamina for this is because it can be argued, and I speak from ignorance, a little tolerant as I want, is because they deal with different things. That's while say the Torah and Christianity deals with the same things and comes to different conclusions. A different eschatology and a different theology and different, it's partially different, it's not the same. Different attitude towards mitzvahs and confession and olam haba and into whatever else. So one can argue that there are at least aspects of the Eastern religions that deal with different things, and the things that are different. That the Torah doesn't deal with, at least not so explicitly, or not so specifically. So you can just bring it all together and make your yeshiva shrev, right? That's what it's called. I think the mistake is very, very basic, and that the openness to the mistake, it comes from all sorts of things, but what it comes down to is while there is an important, not just element, but an essence in Torah of the individual relationship with Hashem, the role of the individual within the community is so crucial, so essential, that it can't be overestimated. The only way it gets overestimated is if it's overestimated at the expense of the significance of the individual. But one can understand that the individual relationship with Hashem. But if one can understand that both of these things have to be emphasized and continued and work hand in hand and not separated at all, it can't be overemphasized. The notion of tefillah v'tzibur, the notion of so many mitzvahs that can only be performed communally. The notion of an individual being chosen, not individually chosen, but being chosen as part of the Am Yisrael, if you're Jewish. And the notion of gerut as being an acceptance into Am Yisrael, and not an individual, opening up an individual relationship with Hashem. We can't just go off and contemplate a lotus or whatever it is that's done. We can't exhale and clear our minds and our souls and all that stuff and try to be at inner peace. Anyone who's at inner peace now is tampering with wishes. That's inner peace. I'm supposed to be at inner peace. The Rambam's conclusion that the mitzvah of learning Torah and teaching Torah is the same, and it's counted as one. Even Rabbi Nisadja, who disagrees with him, it's just a disagreement in count, it's not a disagreement in philosophy, the process of Talmud Torah is a communal one. Even if it's a community of two, but still it's a communal one. That although we can and should do alone, when given the opportunity, is still the study of that which is taught to us by others, and that we can, if we will, teach to others when the occasion arises. And we're part and parcel, even if we daven alone. We daven alone, the Lashon Rabbim. Chaneinu v'yitcha, Hashireinu avinu. Our being alone is still within a plural context. And if my goal is to just be what I should be, and I should have that goal, and I should make efforts along those lines, without the notion of taking the community with me, or moving within the communal context in terms of being, then there's a problem here. And this is it's a relationship with Hashem, it's a relationship with other people too. Look, Hashem is related to the Havdil. As another person, because we don't know how to relate otherwise. So he's compared to our husband, our lover, he's compared to our father, he's compared to our king. Because we don't really know what to do other than to deal with the limited context that we have. But the notion of communion, and I don't mean it in a Christian sense, although it might be related as well, is a loza. The horror of death within the Torah, which is something to be avoided at not all costs, but at a great many costs, including Shabbos and Yom Kippur, is because we're not just interested in making it up there. We're primarily interested in accomplishing down here. No Star Wars. So if you're with a community and you have what to say, and you have to say what they can hear. You can't say what they can't hear. And just like as one receives schar for saying what can be heard, one receives schar for saying what can't be heard. We're not saying what can't be heard. So. But there is a tragedy in the message one has, one can't put across. It may not be an ultimate tragedy. You know. There are other times, there are other opportunities, there are different places. And you have to do everything in the right way, in fact. But,
yeah. Then indeed, many in the beginning were giving over to Buddha, it was to a very nice device they're doing in spite of that.
Yes, it was a tremendous difficulty. And it was an issue. At some point, Yirmiyahu says, I think the classic Navi fits the description you just gave, that his role is Lohotzi Yakar Mizoleo, to pull out the valuable from the Gaio, the cheap. To get to those who are listening, despite the fact that many are not. It happens to every rabbi in high school who was a rabbi of our shul as well. I mean, be well and healthy. He once said, he's right, I mean, there's no more. He was brought into the Breuer's community in New York when he was living in Silver Spring, Maryland at the time. He was brought into the Breuer's community in New York to give a speech there. And he spoke, and he said what he said, it doesn't matter what. And he said that when he speaks there, he feels like 75% of the people like to hear what he's saying, and 25% don't want to hear what he's saying. So when he speaks in his own shul, if he would have given the same speech, He said 25% of people would have been interested in what he's saying. 75% would have been against what he's saying. So what do you do? Do you talk to the 25%? Which is what he did by and large. I can tell you from home, my father was part of the 75. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Or do you say things that will that will be heard better by a greater proportion? Some things you can't say. You can't say whatever they want to hear. Then there's no point at all. Then just go home. What to emphasize, what to encourage, what to deal with a community that's either merachek the case or merachek shmirat mitzvot. Tell you another joke. It's probably not a true story, but it's true, even if it's not a true story. The new rabbi in shul. The first Shabbos, he gets up and tells them that they should keep Shabbos. After the president of the shul goes up and asks them, explains to them that here we don't keep Shabbos, so refer you not to speak about the importance of keeping Shabbos. The next Shabbos, he got up and talks about the importance of Taras HaMishpach. The president went over to him afterwards and said, here we don't really keep Taras HaMishpach, so prefer you not speak about it. The third Shabbos, he got up and spoke about the importance of sending the children to Jewish day school. And the president went over to him afterwards and explained to him that here we don't send our kids to Jewish day school, so please not speak about it. So, that's what do you want me to speak about? He said, speak about Judaism. It's a low pashut. The president wasn't completely wrong. The need for preparing the ground to make sure that your dvarim are nishmaim is something that we don't pay enough attention to. Either because we don't realize it's necessary, or because we don't know how. Some this and some that. And maybe sometimes it can't be prepared, and sometimes but it's a real problem. We're not Yirmiyahu HaNavi that Hashem comes and tells us exactly what to say, and that we realize that even if it's falling on deaf ears, then still Hotziya Karmi Zolel. We choose what we decide to speak about. You have to know, where are people up to? What are people ready to hear? On what point can they be advanced? On what point can 90% be advanced? On what point can 50% be advanced? On what point can 25 or 10% be advanced? And at what point are you just banging your and their head against the wall? Do you perhaps first raise money for the Jewish day school? Strangely enough, without asking people to send their children there. Do you perhaps speak individually to certain members who might be more interested? Do you try to create a basis for that might work? Or do you think, how will I be able to accomplish what I'm trying to do, rather than just do it, just try to do it, or whatever? Rav Kook says in Arota Torah that sometimes the difficulties in learning Torah come from lack of preparation, either physical or spiritual, towards what we're trying to learn. It's certainly true in Havrata Satara. Rabbi Shmuelowitz once said that when he first went into the army, and, his first experience with the rabbinate in the army was that they all had to come and hear a speech from the rabbi who came to speak. So what did the rabbi speak about? He spoke about Shimshon HaGibor. The Rabbi Shmuelowitz was very upset, because here he finally had all these chayalim, you know, he was in Shlap Det, all the people, you know, this group of Russians and, you know, older people, some yeshiva bachrim who was finished yeshiva, and then, you know, all together. What are you talking to them about Shimshon HaGibor for? And the criticism was right. At the same time that the criticism was right, the Rav would have gotten up there and said, you should all keep Shabbos, which Lechara is not the aim, because many of them were not. Those who kept Shabbos, and those who didn't would not have been affected. So he didn't know what to say. So he figured he's in the army for his introductory experience, it's all Hashem Shinaiva, you know. Maybe they'll listen. Maybe. Maybe he still could have brought something better, something more meaningful to them than Shimshon HaGibor. Yeah, are you too careful? Or are you too pushy? But it's an issue that that has to be dealt with. And people don't handle being hit over the head well. They usually faint from it, or at least get a big bump, and that's that. That's the difficulty of giving mussar, actually, rachku zaket. Because we should be interested in knowing when the case is coming, but not to the point that we become dissatisfied because we will not receive that gilui. And we should not become so dissociated with it. It's a problem. But it's a problem that can be dealt with. It can be dealt with. It has to be dealt with in layers, it has to be dealt with care, with, you know, with, and sometimes, you can give a speech to just one person in the audience who will listen to you. I gave a speech in Shulis Shabbos. Two people came over and who normally would not, I think, at least one. And so they appreciated what I said. Which meant, I think, that it hit them. It wasn't directed at them today. It wasn't directed at anyone in particular. It was directed at the whole Hebrew Mikveh. But how many people do these things that they just sit through it? How many people are they looking for something and didn't get it? How many people are... you don't know. You don't know what is and what isn't. And, you have to think, you have to try. You have to put things in perspective. And you have to emphasize what's important. And you have to make sure that what you're emphasizing can be received, at least by some, if not by the majority, and hopefully as much as possible, the Tzibur Yidin. Okay, at this time I see you.